This is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have Jason Watkins on, and he is the CEO and the founder of Purica, and it's well known for recovery and mushrooms. And in the second half, we have Bernie Siegel, and he's going to bring us up to date on stem cell research. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Of the 50 million Americans living with chronic pain, the pain is so bad for 20 million that it keeps them from doing the daily activities of life, researchers say. According to a report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, chronic pain and high-impact chronic pain are more common among women, older adults, the poor, people previously employed, those with public health insurance, or living in rural areas. Not only is chronic pain widespread, it lies at the root of the opioid epidemic, said Dr. David Katz, director of the Yale University Prevention Research Center in New Haven, Connecticut. Potentially overlooked is the crisis that precipitated the opioid crisis, the high prevalence of chronic pain in need of relief, he said. The research was published September 14th in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Could that morning cup of joe bring a health boost to people battling kidney disease? According to new research involving nearly 5,000 people with chronic kidney disease, a hike in daily caffeine intake appeared to lower their odds of an early death. The benefit remained even after considering other important factors such as age, gender, race, smoking, other diseases, and diet, according to one of the study's lead authors, Miguel Bigot Vieira of North Lisbon Hospital Center in Portugal. In the study, Vieira's team tracked data on 4,800 U.S. chronic kidney disease patients monitored from 1999 to 2010. Although the study couldn't prove cause and effect, it found that greater caffeine intake was tied to greater life expectancy for people with chronic kidney disease. The findings were published September 12th in Nephrology, Dialysis, Transplantation. With roughly 40% of Americans now obese, new research finds that one strategy may be helping Americans stay slim: calorie counts on restaurant menus. Following the passage of the Affordable Care Act of 2010, chain restaurants with 20 or more franchises must now list a meal's calorie count on their menus and order boards. And some cities and states have gone a step further, imposing broad calorie label mandates in full-service restaurants. Now, a snapshot of the ordering habits in two full-service sit-down restaurants suggests the legislative moves are having an impact. Study author John Cawley said they conducted an experiment with over 5,500 diners in real-world restaurants and found that calorie labels led customers to order 3% fewer calories. The drop amounted to about 45 fewer calories consumed per meal. The findings were published recently as a report issued by the National Bureau of Economic Research, a private, nonprofit research organization. Circadian rhythms, the 24-hour body clocks that regulate a person's sleep-wake cycle, may affect the timing of seizures in roughly 80% of epilepsy patients, researchers report. These findings, which shed new light on seizure patterns, could help doctors treat the disease more effectively, the researchers said. Senior study author Dr. Mark Cook, a professor at the University of Melbourne in Australia, said understanding the cyclic nature of diseases is vital for treating diseases like epilepsy that continuously fluctuate in their severity. Cook and his colleagues found that for about 80% of people with epilepsy, the timing of their seizures may be associated with their internal body clock. The study used data from a seizure tracking website and mobile phone app used by more than 1,000 people with epilepsy who experienced frequent seizures. The study was published September 12th in the Lancet Neurology Journal.
We have Jason Watkins with us today. He's the CEO and founder, co-founder of Purica, which is a company that's on the island in Duncan, BC. He and his brother have been working with mushrooms and with herbal products to bring about the fullest potential in every aspect of life, work or play, with animals or humans. And so, Jason, it's wonderful to have you on our Health First Radio today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great. So what's new in the world of Purica and the wonders of mushrooms?
Well, yesterday I just got back an hour ago from Toronto on a big show, so I've been talking for 2 days straight, so I hope my voice holds out. But the world of the medicinal mushrooms has really taken root. I think quite a few years ago we knew that was going to happen simply because the research on medicinal mushrooms really surpasses anything out there for a lot of different serious conditions like cancer, HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, or even psychological distress. And now they're using it to treat different things like addiction to other products, things like smoking and other drugs. So something about mushrooms that's been known for thousands of years is really starting to catch on. It's the top of the traditional Chinese medicine field, as well as the Tibetan medicine, a lot of shamanic medicines, and a lot of the compounds in mushrooms are being studied heavily. And like I said earlier, it really started with cancer research. So anyways, we got in there as a pioneer, and we put together something that's really powerful. So we've really focused on the serious benefits of mushrooms rather than just taking them because you think they might boost your immune system a little bit or something like that.
Right. So can you tell us a little bit about the combinations that are being used for cancer right now?
Yeah, some of the key mushrooms that have a lot of research done and that they're now starting to move together with is a cordyceps mushroom, which has over 22 drugs developed from it. Reishi mushroom, red reishi, which is another mushroom that has probably even more research on it than even cordyceps, and it's been used for a number of different conditions as well, including sleep disorders and high blood pressure, things like that. They're all used for immune system and stress. Then there's one of the hottest mushrooms today, and it's been used for thousands of years again. They had different names for it around the world, though, so I think in a lot of different medicines, they didn't know that it was the same mushroom. And is lion's mane. And lion's mane is typically one that's used for things to do with the mind and the gastrointestinal tract. And a lot of the research right now with lion's mane, why it's so exciting, is with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and dementia. And the data that's coming out is really exciting because it actually increases nerve growth factor in the central nervous system and the periphery and in the enteric nervous system, which has to do with the gastrointestinal tract.
That's so amazing. Yeah. So lion's mane, it kind of looks like these long tendrils, like a lion's mane. It almost looks like the villa inside the intestine. Is that like the doctrine of signatures where it's good for that?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that different shapes and different things is what they used to talk about in different types of medicine, what it might be good for. And they would just try it out and see, does it work? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lion's mane, you've probably seen quite a few of the different pictures that there's all different colors, but it really does look like a lion's mane, and they get quite massive, mm-hmm. and you incorporate them into your diet. I guess a lot of people use them as a food in replacement to things like seafood and pork and things like that. I guess it has a similar... I've never tried it actually itself in large, more in the capsulated form, but apparently it has that same kind of texture and taste, and then you can just add your different spices and that to it.
Okay. So, yeah. That's one mushroom I've never found in the wild. I still seek it.
Oh yeah, we have to. Actually, I live on Salt Spring Island, and we've even seen a few in the trees up here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And chaga is another one. Chaga is the one that for stress that the Soviets found when they were doing their research trying to combat stress. They were taking different adaptogenic substances that allow you to adapt to physical or psychological stressors in your environment. And they took a bunch of drugs, things like rhodiola, as well as ginsengs, ashwagandha, and then a number of different medicinal mushrooms that have track record of thousands of years. And they found that chaga was the number one compound, drug or herb or anything else, that helped the people to deal with stress better. And so they started utilizing it with, you know, cosmonauts, athletes, and everything a long time ago. And then once all the walls fell down, the flood of information from a Western point of view, which is more from the Soviet point of view, is, I think, starting to really flood the markets. And now it's, like I said, a few years ago, it just started to really take. And if you were to look on Medline or National Institutes of Health, and you just type in mushroom and whatever kind of condition you're looking for, you'll see that the data on it is very significant with really, like I said, really serious inflammatory conditions, cancer. So, and then you can just talk to somebody that knows how to read some of the literature if it goes more in depth.
Wow. So the chaga also in the Soviet has been used as a cancer remedy, hasn't it?
Yes, and they also used to use it for and they still do in parts of the former Soviet Union. They use it like coffee. And where they use chaga, they found in the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, there's differences, of course, in the Northern Hemisphere on diets and that, but typically the people who consume chaga, like coffee, they have a 15 to 20 years longer lifespan. So that in itself, you have to look at other markers, but that's a pretty significant jump in age, mm-hmm. and it's a really, really powerful antioxidant. Way beyond blueberries and all the berries and things that they say are good for you, it's not even on the same scale. And when you have something that is that high in value, ORAC value of an antioxidant, typically you're seeing that it actually inhibits damage, even acute damage, even if you were injured or you have some type of chronic inflammatory condition, right away it's going to stop the damage in areas that precede the inflammation. And then the inflammation is obviously something that even Western medicine is now accepting is the root of a lot of different conditions like cardiovascular disease, cancer, osteoporosis, and all of them are preceded again by stress. I mean, any types of psychological or physical stresses are causing damage, which is breaking your body down, and that releases inflammatory compounds all over your body. And so this is kind of what we're trying to get at as a company, is to try to get more to the root, not just dealing with the symptoms or even just inflammation, but before inflammation, there has to be damage, and that's why the inflammation happens. And before the damage, or simultaneous with the damage, is some type of stress that's causing a breakdown.
Keeping the stress level down right at the very front, and then working your way down with, like if there is inflammation or if you do have to do detoxification or things like that.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, a lot of people think, what does stress have to do with the fact that I hurt my hip? But if you stress about something, and everybody knows, when say you hurt your hip or your shoulder, you typically don't sleep well. And then if you don't sleep well, you typically are more reactive. You can maybe get moody, or you can't think straight, or you just don't feel, and you're agitated. And that's actually a further stress reaction. Every time that you are, say, irritated or tense or worried or judgmental or moody, whatever, it doesn't really matter, holding on to your opinions when somebody else has a different opinion, you kind of feel tense. And that would be technically your body now is posturing in the sympathetic or stress-related mechanisms in your body are kicked in. And
so
all those mechanisms are to fight or run or freeze, even if it's just that you're mad at your iPad or iPhone had an update that didn't work very well. Whenever you feel tense, your body thinks it wants to fight or run and or freeze, and so it starts to break its muscle tissue down and other tissues to create a lot of sugar so that the muscles can fight or run, and all the blood flow moves away from your core or your trunk and parts of your brain. So you can't think straight when you're stressed. Mm-hmm. You can think certain ways. Your senses can become heightened, but your ability to think altruistically, especially about any kind of long-term or holistic kind of thinking where you can see the big picture, that's completely deleted. That's why some people, when they get stressed, you cannot answer tests, questions that maybe you even knew before. Mm-hmm. Because one of the questions stressed you out before, and that's why they tell you, leave that alone for a while, go to something you know, and come back to it when you're less stressed, because stress is really, all it is just breaking your body down, aging you on the spot, just like taking corticosteroids, like cortisone, prednisone, or if you have Cushing disease, which is a hypersecretion of stress hormone cortisol. Though the symptoms of that are the exact same as accelerated aging. So you're just breaking down your bones, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, dementia, degeneration of the spine, osteoporosis, osteopenia, breakdown and solidification or hardening of the tendons and ligaments and other tissues, so you become less flexible. It's just basically, you can see it in animals easier because they don't live as long. So a horse, for instance, with Cushing's disease or hyperstress, they age really fast, and you can see it physically, but that's also happening inside. So your digestion doesn't work as well. Everything that you see with age, when it happens when you're young, you think you have a disease. Mm-hmm. When it happens when you're older, you'll accept it as part of aging. But in reality, they're both dis-ease mechanism or stress-related mechanism.
Right.
So you got to get the root.
Jason, we're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about how to ignite that parasympathetic nervous system and get us into rest and digest.